Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing? Yesterday, I had no show because I went to an interview, but the guy who decided to do the interview, he had a whole 2 hour before the interview of show, and he's been using slurs in the 2 hours that I can't publish. So I had to delete all of the links to this interview. Unfortunately, you're going to be on your own if you want to find the interview. He was very respectful and didn't use slurs during the interview. And it was a very good interview. Honestly, it's too bad because the guy is going to lose viewership because I can't, as a Canadian, I cannot publish this link on my social media and then get accused of promoting the part of the interview that is not even an interview of me in the video. So too bad. But other than this, the interview itself is very good. Perfect interview. That was very interesting. We got to talk about the history of the internet. It's quite fascinating because these guys consider themselves late to the internet craziness because they weren't there in 2018. They were there in 2019, 2020. And they're like, and the guy was like, When did it begin for you, social media? And I was like, holy shit, maybe 1993? Maybe 1993. When did you start social media? Oh my God, that was a funny question. But it was an excellent interview. Too bad I cannot even share the link of it. Landolt Guntram says, good show indeed, JF, but he is planning to invite you again sometime in the future and express desire to go more confrontational. That happened after the interview. I don't think he really said more confrontational. I saw this segment. Sure, we could have an argument around evolution and God, but I don't think he has anything. And it often happens when I give interview to these Christian channels, they have an issue with my atheism, but they don't bring it up because they want to be respectful for the first interview. Personally, I don't mind. I've been debating these questions for so long. I think it's totally fair. If you want to attack my atheism, I'm always prepared to respond, and that won't make me think that you're a bad interviewer if you do. But yeah, I mean, some people want to run an interview that is more people-oriented and less ideological. But I don't think he has that much of a pushback against my atheism. Because he said, when you hear about these science guys, in the end, they are describing what God does. So basically, he is expressing the compatibilist position that God is compatible with evolution. So if you have this whole theory that, oh yeah, evolution is true, but that's just how God does things, then your God really is a synonym with the laws of nature. That's really what it is. And you might as well call God the laws of physics. If you're going to re-describe God every time we discover something new, say, oh, well, yeah, that just happens to be how God does things, then your God is the laws of physics. New guy says, Christ cucks, cucking to science. Who would have predicted this, right? No, but I mean, Christ cuck. I sometimes use the terms to laugh at those people who are really, really too submitted to the idea for their own good, but I have no problem with Christians, of course. All right, and yeah, yesterday got very busy because the police wanted me again to tell more details about Mama JF. This time they wanted, instead of coming to my home, they wanted me to go to the police station so they could record, you know, these classical videos that you see of suspects overhead and with one investigator, and they're discussing, and that was it. I was in a room, and and I was telling my story, and there's lots of repetition at this point. I don't think there were some new elements that they wanted to know about. They had some more question about, oh, well, your behavior after she left and this and that. But there were also a lot of repetitive questions. So at this point, I think they are kind of lost in their investigation and they're running in rounds. Jessica White says, did you have your lawyer present during the questioning? No, I don't like lawyers. I don't think they're necessary. Personally, I don't think I need a lawyer. I'm clean enough and I know enough about the case and myself. And I know that the situation it would be very hard for me to be framed in a kind of false accusation statement. And in fact, at the end, they wanted me to take a lie detector. So, and I was like, I don't have to do this. That there is nothing in it for me, the lie detector. Because I don't care. The lie detector is not going to convince these millions of people on the internet who don't even care about the evidence. It's not like the lie detector will convince them. And, you know, it's really, the lie detector can really only incriminate you. Imagine that you get nervous on a specific answer. Maybe it's not you who committed the crime, but you get nervous and they detect a sweating response of your finger. It will lead them to have a false positive about you that they will suspect you for months, maybe. They will overly think, we have to find everything about this guy because it's probably him. And yet it was just a false positive of the lie detector. Now, so there's really nothing in it for me. But the guy was like, it would really help us. And so I said, all right, I'll do your fucking lie detector. And I know about lie detectors. I've been self-administrating lie detectors for many times in my life. I know about the strategies to fool them. I know that these strategies aren't perfect and that they are detectable. So I accepted. Maybe next week I will be doing a lie detector to indicate I have nothing to do with Mama JF's disappearance. So they will schedule this for next week. It's like, okay, I mean, in my case, I really don't have anything to do with her disappearance. And so all they're going to ask is, do you have anything to do with her disappearance? And I'll say no. And then they will detect my level of nervousness. There are generally three components that are part of the lie detector mechanism. The sweat on the finger is extremely sensitive. And I've done it enough that personally, I have a personal feeling of the amount of sweat on my finger. And I was telling the investigator, you know, I'm a nervous guy because he was asking me questions. And just the questions that he was asking me, just the fact that he was asking me, are you willing to pass a lie detector test? I was feeling the sweat on my finger. It was like, pew, pew. It's a feeling that I can experience because I've been doing it enough that I have the sensory feedback to feel it. And so I was like, you're going to detect some sweat. And I remember in my experimentation with these lie detectors, I remember that there were a couple of false positives. There were things that I was saying the truth, but I was getting nervous for some other reason. And my mind was going, oh, holy shit, maybe I'm causing a false detection here. Like, you can become paranoid that you're about to cause a false positive and it causes the false positive because you get nervous about this rather than some other thing. So overall, I warned the inspector. I said, look, I don't believe in these machines. I know the rates. I know that they are kind of good, but that, you know, I don't believe in them in terms of finding the truth for real because there's lots of false positive. Webble says, I was going to donate, but you can't spend it behind bars, so I'll treat myself instead. Well, if you're not like Webull and you'd like to support my life in prison, maybe, you know, support my ability to buy a pack of cigarettes from inside, send your super chats using the dollar button on Odyssey. Odyssey is my favorite platform to receive support for the show. Alternatively, feel free to use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Shamrock says, do y'all remember the film where the guy fooled the lie detector with a sharp nail in his shoe that he poked himself with? Yeah, so that is the countermeasure. The idea, whether it's with a nail or with something, the idea is to induce a state of distress during the control session so that all of your control rises are equal. So that the truth, the background sweating, expecting for the moment of where you say the truth is very high, but the machine doesn't know this. And so now you've fooled the machine into going very high. And the moment where they do a control for lies, you try to be as calm as you can. Now suddenly the truth is not so distant from the lies. And when you lie during the interview, you end up scoring equal to the truth of the control, because in the truth of the control, you were self-pinning with a nail. That is the idea. I have never attempted to develop these tactics. I've never trained to do countermeasures, nor did I train to detect countermeasures. But I know that these exist. I know this from the literature. Mark D's channel says, I don't think they take BTC in prison. Hey, guys, I have a lot of Bitcoin. When we're out of here in 20 years, I'll be paying for all these packs of cigarettes. We'll have hundreds of Bitcoins, and we'll be starting a shrimp restaurant. I've been watching Forrest Gump lately. I was talking with the lady that called me, and I was talking about IQ and the importance of IQ in a couple and whether the man should be more intelligent than the woman. And it made me think about Forrest Gump as the low IQ, the case of the low IQ, which Forrest Gump kind of represents the history of America, I think. I think that the movie is about this. So I wanted to watch it again. It's a good movie. It's a beautiful movie. I love at the beginning when Forrest Gump gets into school, but he's not intelligent enough, and his mother fucks the school director so that Forrest Gump can get into the school. I love the metaphorical representation here. But well, I think that this is an intentional metaphor for a kind of, all right, America has never been super smart. It's never been a country of cultural production like Europe was. But it's kind of trying to be, and it kind of has these prostitute tricks to get there. And America can fuck the school director to make sure that the retarded child gets into the school. It's a little bit like the way America places itself at the top of technological development, and yet isn't quite a civilization of culture the way Europe can be seen as. You know, it's not a civilization of deep culture. That is what I think is the metaphor in this hoard up mom of Forrest Gump who looks at the director and says, there must be something we can do. And the director says, well, are you married? And she says, he's on vacation. Based Devolver says, your mama sure does care about your schooling. Shanoff. Yeah, that is what the director says after fucking the mom. Free Palestine. This Jew stands with Palestine. Climate justice now. And Greta Thunberg stand with Gaza. And... oh my God, why are these people always so ugly? But anyways, I agree with them on the particular... on the particular question of Palestine. But what turned out to drag the attention of the entire world is this blue octopus that was featured on the picture with Greta Thunberg while I was not doing a show yesterday. So I'm talking about it today. We now have a modified version. You know, like the communist pictures where they want to erase you from history? Well, Greta Thunberg has communistically erased the blue octopus from the picture now. Hermit M says, what's the official name? Zogtopus? That could be a good name. I didn't know about this blue octopus thing. It refers to an old illustration of the whole planet basically being wrapped by a blue octopus that wants to dominate over the planet. And it's some sort of anti-Semitic suggestion, as some people said. I don't know if they were just trying to look for trouble in Greta, or they were trying to perhaps see Greta as a secretly based... it's kind of exciting, this idea that Greta could be the chosen child. She could be the one who, through her childhood, basically gets the full credit of the system, like the mainstream, and then suddenly just goes through adolescence and just goes absolute power levels, like 8,000, 9,000. That is kind of exciting, this idea that this blue octopus could have been a symbol. The fact, forget about the blue octopus. I mean, here's Greta with a stand with Gaza, which is a very normie take in leftist circles, socialist circles. It's not that amazing, but it's kind of amazing when you consider just how much Israel has pulled on these public personalities that have been largely elevated by, yes, Jewish media. In that sense, there is some act of revolution in this picture, even if you leave the blue octopus aside. So add the blue octopus and people were making up stories and thinking, oh my God, is this Greta dropping the mask and saying that she's going to be going forward, basically anti-Jewish power, anti this balanced control of the Jews over certain things like the media. Unfortunately, like all the time, whenever you think you have a based GF, she turns out not to be so based. She has deleted the original picture, republished it without the blue octopus, and says, it has come to my knowledge that the stuffed animal... So there's this supposedly anti-Semitic propaganda picture by the Nazis. An anti-Semitic propaganda cartoon by one of Nazis Germany's most famous cartoonists, Joseph Planck, which shows Winston Churchill as an octopus in a cartoon warning of a worldwide conspiracy. Okay. So she has removed the blue octopus. It has come to my knowledge that the stuffed animal shown in my earlier post can be interpreted as a symbol for anti-Semitism, which I was completely unaware of. The toy in the picture is a tool often used by autistic people as a way to communicate feelings. Oh, I love this. you have to be thankful for the timeline we live in, where here we have a victim Olympics. Here it's like, okay, well, I'm sorry that some people out there, third parties who were not related to the message at all, have misinterpreted this thing as being an attack onto the minority that the Jews are. But this thing is my plush toy as an autistic person. It's like, well, I'm part of a minority too, you know, the autist, the Jews. It's like, okay, well, the Jews were hurt by this message, but it wasn't intended because this message was that way because I'm an autist and I need this plush toy as a support animal or some sort of... I'm struck by the support animal of Anna Hayes. I mean, it's such a weird... Such a weird world we live in. And we've seen Greta pull that autistic card a few times. And normally it's when she's in hot water. When she's in hot water and she has to justify something, she becomes autistic again. It's quite fascinating. Bez Devolver says, have you noticed that Gad Saad has absolutely lost his mind on Twitter over the last few weeks? Absolutely, I did. That's why I quote tweeted a lot of his stuff and said, look at how ridiculous the argument is. He's blocking a lot of people who are saying, hey, it doesn't make sense, your stuff. Yes, as I indicated 1 week ago, the Jews are pissed. They're completely going insane on this Israeli attack Hamas question. Totally losing touch with reality. So we are, of course, against any type of discrimination and condemn anti-Semitism in all forms and shapes. This is non-negotiable. That is why I deleted the last post. Well, you can still say this is not as based as it could be, but you can be grateful for Greta here to be totally silent on the, you know, Israel solidarity with respect to Hamas. Because a Ben Shapiro would probably want more from Greta, you know. And that is why a lot of these pro-Israeli people on Twitter have been extremely insulting to Greta. Some of them are not satisfied with the response that Greta has given, and I understand why. It's because there's no place in there where she stands in solidarity with the victims on the Israeli side of the Hamas attack. So in a way, she still stands vastly in solidarity with Gaza. She's just making a little wink to anti-Semitism here and saying, oh yeah, that's not what I meant. Interesting. There is a neutrality to this statement that I'm sure some Jewish pro-Israel people don't like. End of the line. Joel says the most ridiculous poster is the bottom left one. This Jew stands with Palestine. Yes, this one, it's like, oh yeah, oh, you want me to care for this impressive fact that, oh, you are a Jew, and oh my God, you are taking against your own people. Wow, that's just how bad the situation is. Whoa. But it's, yeah, just like you, I am not quite moved by this. The Zionist lobby has accused Greta Thunberg of anti-Semitism for displaying an octopus. She is autistic, and it is a symbol such people use. I don't know if I've been unsubscribed from the autism mail letter, but I haven't been told about this. This is how are we this week with everyone in the mainstream media suddenly all stating together, oh yeah, it's a symbol that's very, very common use in autism. I've never heard of this. I've never been handed the blue octopus as a autistic child or autistic adult. Gray says, fellow autist on 4chan use this image. Well, they will start. Now that we have the, as I've shown on my thumbnail, we now have the Pepe blue octopus. This has potential to become one of the top memes of this year. Because I can totally see this blue octopus totally dominating the 4chans. The Zionist lobby has accused Greta Thunberg of anti-Semitism for displaying an octopus. She is autistic and it is a symbol such people use. Sir Keir Starmer stands next to two octopuses and the Zionist lobby is silent. The weaponization of anti-Semitism has reached a puerile level. So here we had another event of anti-Semitism. Even worse than a blue octopus here, a pink octopus, suggesting that the Jew is ultimately teaming up with woman to undertake their world domination, here represented by the standing of the octopus over a milkshake machine. Absolute terrible dog whistle here. I totally disavow this anti-Semitic message by Mike Starmer, whoever that is. End of the line, Joel says, Jeff, over a long enough time scale, everything becomes a dog whistle. Well, certainly, and what I noted, at one point in my life, I realized dog whistles are a direct product of censorship and social taboos. Ultimately, you get more dog whistles as you make speech less and less affordable. You get the hiding strategy appears as a result of the cost of speaking in a non-secret way. Vol says, this story is interesting because it probably informs us of how these influencers are more subtly nudged than overtly puppeteered. Even a vulnerable child like Greta is preferably made to feel like she chooses what she does, hence the occasional slip-up and semblance of free will. Well, definitely, I don't expect everything she does to be subject to such control. Like, I don't expect her to have such a direct handler that they would be like, oh no, you can't have this blue octopus. Sorry. But they are handled in many ways, but not so directly. All right. What else do we have? Nigel Farage, what a disappointment. Nigel Farage says 100,000 on the streets of London, very public calls for jihad documented on video. This country is in real trouble. And it's like, what about the calls for jihad, for Israeli jihad that we've seen again and again in the last few weeks? We've literally seen the top intellectual heads of the Zionist movement, the Jordan Peterson, the Ben Shapiro, say in absolutely no unclear term that they were for the genocide of Palestine. We've heard them say, give them hell. Well, are you satisfied, Jordan, at this point? Have they been given enough hell? Have the civilians of Palestine suffered enough? We've had people call the Palestinians animals that didn't deserve human rights. We've seen all of this deploy on Twitter, and yet Nigel Farage is alarmed at the fact that there are people on the streets calling for jihad. What about Israeli jihad? Isn't that weird that we don't have a word for it? We just have the word to point to the Islamic ID. But when the Jews call for genocide on Twitter, we don't have a word for it because they would want it to be considered a normal thing. They wouldn't want it to be a criticizable, delineated entity. The whole George Floyd story was a lie, says Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson just challenged one of the left's most sacred cows, George Floyd, an ex-con who died with an elephant dose of fentanyl in his system and a history of health issues while in custody of Minneapolis police. According to Carlson, we need to revisit certain popular narratives. Yeah, to me, it makes no doubt, and I have expressed it back in those days, that George Floyd, it is not clear to me that it is the knee of Derek Chauvin that killed him. I think there was plenty of evidence to conclude that it could have been a death that just happened at that point, and that the Derek Chauvin knee was not a contributing factor. I've said I can understand the legal argument to say, well, if Derek Chauvin's technique used was illegal, then it was a physical assault. And if it was a physical assault, then whatever health problems George Floyd had already and whatever drug in his system, perhaps the physical assault made it worse. So I can understand that there is a potential rational path for possible incrimination of Derek Chauvin. My position then was just to say, I don't think this is beyond reasonable doubt. I think it's kind of pulled by the hair levels of causality analysis. And normally in a criminal situation, you shouldn't be pulling things by the hair. That's precisely violating the doctrine of beyond reasonable doubt. I am not sure beyond reasonable doubt that Derek Chauvin caused in any way the death of George Floyd. And I am absolutely certain that George Floyd has at least partly caused his own death with his behavior of resistance toward the police. That there is no question around the fact that George Floyd could have taken another route that day. End of the line, Joel says, Chauvin's humiliation ritual included wearing that stupid COVID mask during the trial. Yes, it was a ridiculous trial. And when they brought in the supposed experts, that was it for me. I was seeing really what the justice system can become under bad faith. What happened to Derek Chauvin might happen to you at some point. And that is scary. House investigators revealed 200,000 direct payments to Joe Biden. The House Oversight Committee on Friday revealed a direct payment to President Joe Biden, which appears to have been laundered through his brother, James. In 2018, James Biden received $600,000 in loans from AmeriCorps, a financially distressed and failing rural hospital operator. According to bankruptcy court documents, James Biden received these loans based upon representations that his last name, Biden, could open doors and that he could obtain a large investment from the Middle East based on his political connections. AmeriCorps wired $200,000 into James and Sarah Biden's personal account, not their business bank account. On the same day, James Biden wrote a $200,000 check from the same personal bank account to Joe Biden. It's very clear what's happening. Joe Biden is up for purchase. And at this point, I'm wondering, what's the easiest thing to do for the right at this point? Should we just vote for Trump? Or maybe there's a case to be made that we should just buy Joe Biden. You're talking about peanuts here. Why the heck would we go into a whole presidential campaign? The guy is purchasable for $200,000. Why don't we all collectively amass money not Hamas, but Hamas money, you know, collect money. We make a GoFundMe, and, you know, we find the budget that's necessary to buy the whole family enough crack for Hunter, maybe prostitutes for Hunter, full expenses of living for Joe Biden. And then we say, look, we're buying you, Joe Biden, but we expect you to completely dismantle the federal government. It seems that it would be the easiest path. There's lots of speculation that is rising, and there's a very bad article by CNN. Very bad article around the hospital blast. So there is a lot of very good analysis out there about the blast site of the hospital, what could have caused it, what was the timing of it. Is it compatible with an Israeli airstrike or a broken rocket from the side of Hamas? But the CNN analysis doesn't go into any sort of detail that would be supportive of their thesis, because all of these analyses converge toward the idea that the Hamas rocket hypothesis isn't a realistic one. That there is probably, in fact, a big error in what people interpret as being the hospital blast, because there is an explosion that happens in the same area 20 seconds earlier. So there was a small explosion 20 seconds earlier before the big blast that killed a lot of people at the Hamas, not the Hamas, but the Palestinian hospital. The Al-Hali Hospital. And a lot of people are confusing the first blast with the second blast. The second blast is the big one that leads to a lot of death. The first blast could have been a fragmented rocket, a lost rocket. Here we have Oliver Alexander, who says, after looking at all the currently available data on the Al-Hali Arab Hospital explosion, I have made two discoveries. The rocket in this video is in fact a Tamir interceptor missile launched by Iron Dome and not directly related to the explosion. So there are people who are looking at the wrong videos. There are other videos that pop up from this night that are misleading, and they are not the true event of the hospital explosion. Most importantly, on this video, you can see right here, I will remove my face. You can see right here that there will be two explosions. So one shows up at the point 24 in the video, so it's going to be in 3 seconds. One. See, a little explosion right here. Boom. And then 20 seconds later, that is a larger explosion that is the true hospital explosion at around 44. You should see it right here. See the flash here? That was the bigger explosion. So there are two explosions. That's a first confusion to fix. Then the point of CNN is to say, well, there's all this video evidence that there was something happening in the sky above the hospital. But we can't quite say if this is related to the explosion at all. So totally inconclusive on this thing. Yes, there were blasts in the sky, but was it above where the hospital is? Was it related to the explosion? We can't know. So no idea about this, but yet they conclude it's very unlikely that it's an Israeli missile. They completely ignore the whistling sound. They gave it to an acoustic expert, and the acoustic expert concluded, well, we can't extract directional information from the sound. But the case of the people on the internet has not been that we can extract directional information from the sound. It's been that this sounds like a JDAM. And now the logic that the CNN article takes is to say, well, we have looked at the blast site and it's not big enough to be a JDAM. But what if it's a JDAM that exploded imperfectly? What if it's a JDAM, but you're looking at the wrong blast site? Because now we know that there has been two explosions in the same area of the city. So maybe you're looking at the smallest explosion. If you found a blast site that looks like a rocket, maybe that was the explosion at 24 seconds, not the one at 44 seconds of the video. So there's a big problem with this approach where they say the blast site isn't big enough, but you don't even know if it's the blast site that led to the most damage. Because the blast site that led to the most damage could be a blast that happened that you don't know where it happened, and yet it led to a shock wave that killed people inside the hospital. So very poor article, and then they have people saying the sound isn't the sound that would be made by advanced weaponry. But we know that this is false because we have a video of advanced weaponry where these exact sounds are happening. We know that this is false because we have a video of an American base or something in Iraq that received this kind of missile. And it's exactly the same sound that we hear on the cell phone filmed explosion of the hospital. So this is a totally amateur article by CNN where the logic isn't there. But what the paragraphs keep going back to is, so at the end, despite the fact that, you know, these points of logics are totally flawed and we're not sure of anything, the conclusion of the expert was that it's not Israel. Is it possible that your expert... I'm going to say it. Is it possible that your expert is biased? Is it possible that your expert is in a network like that of academia, where there will be a lot of pro-Israeli people? Is it possible? Because the rational process that you lay out, CNN, makes zero sense. Like, if you want to claim that this is not the sound that the JDAM does, show me a video of a JDAM explosion. I've seen a video of a JDAM explosion, and it's exactly the sound that it makes. So how can you have an expert saying it's not the sound that a JDAM makes? When I've seen the video, I've heard the sound. It's exactly what it does. Unbelievable. Absolute lies, flawed interpretations, and overall, they obsess about this crash site or this blast site. But who knows if this is the site that is at the origin of the explosion that killed a lot of people. All we know is that this is a site where there was a blast. But we now know that there were two blasts. So are you looking at the small blast here or the big blast? If you're looking at the small blast, you're going to conclude, oh, well, this looks more like a Hamas rocket, because a JDAM must have a five-meter tall crater. That is one of the points they make in the CNN paper. Well, can a JDAM explode at, you know, at a level that's a little higher? Perhaps a JDAM can explode before it contacts the ground. If so, the crater could vary. The JDAM may have exploded so high that it didn't create much of a crater. Secondly, is it even the right blast site you're looking at? Or are you looking at the smaller one? If you're looking at the smaller one, that would explain why hundreds of people have died, yet what we see in this particular blast site is a relatively restricted area of damage. And anyway, this blast site had already been analyzed. And yes, DK Shadow points, there are airburst variants. Absolutely. So you can blow these weapons in a way that focuses on doing a hair wave without the targeted, without the normal explosion that you would expect from the traditional weapon. And anyways, this blast site has been perfectly analyzed by Lord Bebo, and to focus on the size of the blast as indicative of it's a mass because it's small, I find it a particularly ridiculous route of reflection for CNN. Lord Bebo has analyzed other items of this crash, of this blast site. And you know, it's like, okay, if you just interpret the blast site, that is a relatively small blast site. But then you interpret other evidence. First, the fact that the cars are bent from the top. So the explosion probably didn't happen on the ground where these cars are. Probably happened way above the cars, because the way the cars are bent is from an impact from the top. Secondly, look at this palm tree here. The palm tree was affected by damage. The palm tree is very far. You will notice here the grass isn't even damaged or burned. The grass isn't damaged or burned, but the palm tree is above the grass. That is very interesting. It suggests that the bomb may have exploded at least at the height of the palm tree, if not above. Now, those are not, I wouldn't expect that this is what the Palestinian rockets do. Explode in expectation of a certain ground distance. That sounds like what an advanced type of weapon system does. That sounds exactly like what JDAM does, among others. So those were important points raised by Lord Bebo, which CNN totally ignores. And then there's also internal damage to the building. Broken glasses, indicative perhaps of something that is less of a blast damage from an explosion, but more a blast damage from an air shock type of weapon. A lot of the buildings were basically unaffected except the windows. So, all in all, CNN tries to build a kind of red herring around the question of the diameter of the burning. The diameter of the burning blast site. But this can be misleading, because first, you don't even know if you're looking at the bomb that made the most damage. You may be looking at a fragment. You may be looking at a fragment that caught fire and led to a local fire. You may be looking at a smaller explosion. You may be looking at a Palestinian rocket that was misled, but that didn't cause all of these deaths in the hospital close to there. It is so misleading what CNN does. I totally dismiss it. Bloomberg, terrified at the prospect of America exporting its gun culture. Bloomberg, the news media company named after and owned by prominent anti-gun billionaire Michael Bloomberg, is terrified of a worldwide gun culture. In a recent series of articles, Bloomberg journalists detail how firearm companies are fueling violence across the world through sales to other countries. While the articles certainly attempt to frame gun ownership in other countries as the cause of violence, two key points are left out. First, many firearm exports worldwide are specifically for law enforcement and military contracts, not civilian sales. So while Sig Sauer does export firearms overseas, many of these are for arming police officers and soldiers and foreign militaries. Second is that violence isn't caused by firearms. Violence is a human problem. Okay, a text about... I hadn't read this text, so I'm just reading it live here. A text about gun culture fueling violence or not. Well, I don't have a strong position. They're obviously, having guns is an escalation of violent capacities, but sometimes having a stronger violent capacity leads to less violence. Like, if I walk around Canada, I know that 99.9% of the people I cross don't have a gun. So perhaps I can be more impolite. Perhaps I can be more insulting, because I know that there's not going to be a random gun pulled on me. If I walk into America, I know that potentially every person I encounter could have a gun. And so perhaps I want to be more polite. Perhaps I want to keep my distances. And so sometimes a higher violence capacity leads to less effective experience of violence. First in the nation, Arkansas forces Chinese company to sell its farmland. This will be our last news item for tonight. I see that Jan is in the regular chat. It's been a while, we haven't seen him. I wanted to tell you, Jan, I still have to read your book, for which you sent me a massive super chat. I've been so busy, man. Sorry. I've been so busy that I can't read this book. It's just the way it is. One day I will read it and I will give you the feedback. I'll do a show about it. But I'm so thankful that you've been generous to the show. But I cannot find a minute in my life. My life has been insane these days. But thank you so much for your donation, Dan. And your book is still on my to-do list. It's the book about the eugenicists who are kind of a free family who argue that some kind of eugenics is desirable inside their family. Jan says, would the random bombing of Gaza push the population into more frantic breathing from a RK perspective? That is a good question. I tend to think that yes, that most exposure to violent situations leads to a selection event for the most vicious, for the most, all right, we have to, you know, we have to make more babies with less material. And so for K selection to, and I know that there's all sorts of critiques out there that R and K aren't a thing, but I think we know what we're talking about here. We're talking about luxurious type of breeding with super high investment of parental effort and low amounts of offspring versus just rabbit type, multiple offspring, hundreds of offspring type of reproduction with low parental care. And I do think that most violent situations, and when you look at the history of countries that have high criminal rates, high rates of criminality, they are associated with higher birth rates. I'm thinking here, compare Africa to perhaps the north, compare the south of Africa to the north of Africa with a slightly lower crime rate. And you have a slightly lower birth rate too. And then get into Europe, you have an even lower crime rate and you have an even lower birth rate. So yes, I think there is something that like when you are in a war scenario where it's going to be everyone for themselves, it's also everyone for themselves in the breeding world. And it's also this whole, all right, I have a little bit of calories that I caught from finding a random can of beans. Let's make a baby. Everything becomes a everything becomes an aphrodisiac under the bombs. Isn't that a romantic thought to have? Like, the one thing that our civilization tries to avoid is this whole war thing. And yet, this whole war thing and violence and the bombs falling from the sky, all of it is probably the the greatest aphrodisiac, much more than oysters and wine and this kind of crap that people use as aphrodisiac. As I was making the case to Just Pearly Things when I did my offer to inseminate her, you know, the world is ending, Pearly Things, we need to make a baby now. Then that is the best argument. When if you can put a woman in the belief that the world's about to end, it's your last chance to fuck, you might get some babies from it. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being with me. Don't forget to buy your blue plush toys if you want to help with your autism or if you have an autistic loved one. Give them the blue plush toy. It really helps. Greta is right. Thank you.